Hello and welcome to Procedurally Generated. Max and Henry are out of town this week, so John and I are kind of holding down the fort. I decided to bring in my friend Nick, Pinkerton South Bay Button Mashers. Nick, can you give us a little intro here and just talk about what you're doing out there in the Bay Area?
So I run a video games community that's all about bringing people together who don't necessarily know each other, basically using video games to help create friendships. So I founded the club because I used to have friends over and we'd play Mario Kart and Halo and games like that. So I just wanted to kind of recreate those memories and meet some pretty cool gamers in the process.
Yeah, it's kind of like the good times growing up.
Yeah.
Sitting in your friend's basement playing GoldenEye.
Yeah, and so we met in college at Santa Clara University out in the San Francisco Bay Area. What's the range? Do you get people from like Oakland, San Francisco, kind of up and down, you know, the 101, 280, San Jose, stuff like that?
We do get some people outside of 650 and 408. We've had people come as far as Manteca and Central Valley.
Really?
And then there's some people who come from like Morgan Hill or Pleasant Hill in the East Bay. So yeah, we occasionally get people who are trekking like 60 minutes or more.
And what is the genesis behind it? I mean, kind of what inspired you to do this?
I actually had just gotten back from PAX Prime in 2013. And I was looking to do something with my gaming passion, and it just kind of hit me to like actually try to make friends the way that I used to, you know, spend time with my friends, which was, you know, playing video games and just having a good old time that way. And so I would start having people over at my place once every other week or so, and then eventually other people wanted to host at their place, and then, you know, a year or so later, we got into exhibiting at conventions, and so it just kind of snowballed from there.
Where do these take place? I mean, is it kind of still people's houses, or are you renting out places to do this?
Yeah, most of it is still people just, you know, opening up their homes to really complete strangers. I mean, being in the Bay Area, we're in a pretty safe environment, and there are a ton of people who, if they're not super passionate about games, they're probably interested in like actually observing how they work and whatnot. So we feel pretty comfortable still kind of making that our core offering, but we do also exhibit at several conventions and public events. There's a gamer bar in downtown San Jose that we've set up at before. And yeah, we have some other ways of kind of getting ourselves out there into the public realm.
How did you start contacting people for this? Was it mostly social media, or was it like you'd go to a bar and post flyers?
You know, Meetup? Mm-hmm. You guys use that out there? Meetup.com?
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I did. So that's how we get most of our members, or some people will hear about us through Facebook, because we do have a Facebook group page. We're getting a website together as well.
I'm sure just word of mouth between friends usually helps with that kind of thing.
So, Nick, you're from California, but you're a Vikings fan, and we have a Packer fan in studio. We won't go too much into this because it's a video game podcast, but just I know we texted during that game, but how are you still feeling after that that little shank on the, 27-yard field goal or whatever?
You know, man, it was something that I almost kind of expected, because, you know, we're Vikings fans.
Yeah, exactly.
I felt so bad.
Time before in, you know, the 98 season, Brett Favre in the interception in New Orleans. So I was actually, you know, I shook it off a few hours and sorry, John, but, you know, I always consider a good NFL season when the Patriots, the Packers, and the Seahawks don't win the Super Bowl.
No, that's fine. That's completely reasonable. I'm from Milwaukee, so that's why I'm a Packer fan.
Yeah.
But I moved here when I was 9, so I've kind of grown up in this environment.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty low key with my Packer fandom. In my heart, I love them deeply, but like I'm not going to start fights.
Yeah.
Over it.
You'd be upset, Nick. There's more than their fair share of Packers bars.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Billy's in St. Paul is a good spot. I can't remember. Where did I bring you? You were out here a while back, right, Nick?
Yeah, about, 5-6 years ago?
Yeah, so I don't know if I brought you in. But, yeah, you almost can't. They've invaded our territory, mm-hmm, across the border. They also, and this is a very,
so
Wisconsin, very Wisconsin thing, have you had Spotted Cow, or familiar with that product, Nick?
I'm not. I'm lactose intolerant. That's probably why.
No, it's a beer.
It is beer.
Yeah.
So
it's a Wisconsin beer.
You're in luck.
Yeah, exactly. But it's only sold in Wisconsin, and they actually had a sting. You heard about this, right, John? They had like a sting operation in Maple Grove.
What?
Yeah, because someone was selling. This was like a while back, dude. And I think it just got resolved. This is how bad Wisconsin is. They come in here with their football team, mm-hmm. but don't let us sell their best beer. And honestly, great product. But yeah, no, you can only get it in Wisconsin.
I heard of someone getting like a $20,000 fine in New York for. Like bringing cases over there.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right. And you can just go to Hudson, which is just across the river.
Yeah, it's half hour away.
Yeah, but you can't sell it in Stillwater. But Maple Grove's hilarious, west side of the city. Anyways, we're getting way away from. Go ahead, Nick.
You guys happen to hear about the sting operation that was out here around the time of the Super Bowl?
No, I gotta imagine it's not good.
Let's just say that there were too many. Massage parlors giving out happy endings.
Oh.
No, that happens. That's an epidemic, like with the Super Bowl. By the way, what did you do for it? Because it was in Santa Clara. That's the other side of the city, right? The stadium wasn't there when we were in school. But what did you do for the Super Bowl?
I went over to my girlfriend's place and we watched it on the big screen there.
Okay.
There weren't any. I don't think in the suburbs there were any like huge Super Bowl happenings. You know, if you go to downtown San Jose. They had like one of the streets, they had like some turf there and, you know, some decorations, but it wasn't too big there. The city, in San Francisco.
Really?
Was pretty decorated. Yeah.
They had like a four block radius.
Yeah, no,
Super
I knew
Bowl
that.
City.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be just insane.
Yeah, it's just a funny dynamic, and you can speak to it, Nick, but like the relationship between San Jose and San Francisco, like San Francisco is all like out there and crazy. San Jose is very like sterile and like, it's like a business place, you know what I mean? It's kind of a business town, at least the way I see it. I mean, you probably know it better than I do, but it is kind of funny that I would think San Jose would be the one trying to promote that it's like right next to us, you know what I mean?
I don't have much to comment on with regarding that, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyways, we should get to video games. I think the biggest news here was the release of XCOM 2 and Unravel. John, I know you've played a lot of XCOM 2.
I've played maybe too much XCOM 2 in the last couple of days.
You said about 20 hours?
20 hours, yep.
Can you tell people a little bit about it? First of all, it's PC only,
it is
right?
PC only. The last one was on consoles and PC, but they decided to just make the PC version, either because it was easier or it didn't sell well on consoles. It's a turn-based tactical game. You have about 4 to 6 squad members that you send out at a time. Everything is just brutally difficult. You will lose people most missions, and it's permadeath.
Yeah.
So, like, if you, like, customize your character and make them, like, oh, I made Tom and I made Nick, they're going
to
be great. And
they're trying to kill us off,
and then they
Nick.
Die. It's a heartbreaking moment. But it's a lot of fun just, like, creating those characters, setting those mental expectations, and then just having them all fall apart.
And it's very strategy based, right? Which probably makes it appropriate for mouse.
Yep, it's all grid based and did you play the last XCOM? Did either of you play it?
I played, is it the Bureau or something?
So the Bureau is a weird one because that was originally going to be the XCOM reboot, and people are like, "Well, what happened to the turn-based XCOM that I grew up with?" And then about a year later, they're like, just kidding, we're making regular XCOM, and it's coming out before the Bureau is.
Yeah.
So the Bureau's obviously different since it's a shooter.
It felt like Mass Effect.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yep. But yeah, this is just straight up hardcore PC strategy game.
Nick, we should make this clear, by the way. You're Xbox One, but do you play in PC at all?
Not much anymore. I'll be upgrading probably later this year.
Okay, and you haven't done much with XCOM, right?
No, I mean, I'm a little bit familiar with that type of gameplay, and there are some other independent developers who have been making games kind of like that. So I know that, like, Double Fine made a game called Massive Chalice, which was kind of like a hybrid of XCOM. That was kind of a neat one. I think there was this other one called Dead Rock Divide, but I don't know if that's out yet, but yeah.
Who do you describe this game for, John? Like, if you're going to get into it and you haven't played the first one?
Who would it
appeal to?
It would appeal to people who like sci-fi stuff. Yeah. It would appeal to people who have played games like Final Fantasy Tactics,
okay,
Fire Emblem, Awakening was a really big game about 2 years ago, and the new one's coming out next week.
Same permadeath thing.
Yep, right? Same permadeath thing, same grid-based tactical gameplay, same attachment to your characters. I think it'd be for mainly those people, I'd say also people who play like Civilization.
Yeah.
Who are kind of into like the world building.
Yeah.
Civilization games.
Right.
4X is the genre. But
and is this a massive game? Like a lot of hours?
Yeah.
Into
it? Yeah. Like I've started over once already.
Really?
So I got 10 hours in and realized that everything I was doing was not good enough.
Oh, that would kill me.
There's this timer that goes on, like the aliens are figuring out this giant like doomsday project, and you see the meter on your world map, and as that goes higher and higher, the odds against you get higher and higher as well. And so every time that pips up, like you're like, all right, what do I have to do to bring this back down? Find a UFO that's been downed and take it over? Do I have to defend these supply lines from the aliens? I guess I should say the story is, it's after the events of XCOM 1. The humans have lost the war against the aliens. Aliens have taken over Earth.
Okay.
And have tried to incorporate humans into their culture. You're an underground resistance organization trying to fight back against the aliens.
Okay.
So, like, you're already, like, a weak power against aliens, so you're trying to overcome the odds to take them down.
Is it hard to get into if you haven't? Like, I remember with Dragon Age Inquisition, it'd be almost impossible to get into that game without understanding the backstory. If you haven't played XCOM 1,
they lay it out with a cutscene at the beginning. Okay. And there's really not that much story to it. Like, there's a little bit in the text of, like, your scientist or your engineer. Like, they're related to people from the previous game, but you don't really need to know anything about them. There's a lot of flavor text for, like, when you're doing alien autopsies from corpses that you've brought back. Just throughout the game, you develop new weaponry, new tech to fight the aliens. So that's kind of, like, the progression as you go to make your guys stronger and stronger.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun, but I've had a lot of late nights drinking.
Right.
And
you said a little whiskey and a little action.
Oh, no, it's 3 o'clock now. I should probably go to bed. I have to wake up in like 5 hours.
Right.
That's been my entire week.
Gotcha.
It's tough. Like, you have to go in knowing you're going to fail. And that's why I restarted. So 10 hours in, I'm like, all right, I've taken the things that I've learned from my failures. I'm going to start over. And I was doing so much better because I knew what to expect, like how to tread carefully in the missions, how to build up my squad mates, what technology to research to give myself a better edge.
I've never gotten 10 hours into a game and reset, but I have reset after a couple hours, just being like, yeah, I know I did something. Nick, have you had that experience before where you're like, yeah, I need to start fresh in order to enjoy this game?
Oh, sure. That happened with me at least once or twice with Pokemon when, you know, back in the late 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any
final thoughts here?
I guess, like, people who might be interested in a tactical game should play it.
Yeah.
It's one of the best games this year.
That's
hands
what I've
down.
Heard. Yeah.
It does have some technical flaws. There's some weird, like, graphical glitches. And people's saves have been getting buggy.
Oh, that's not
good.
It's a multiple save system, though, right?
It is. Like, it saves constantly.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to want to figure out your saves and know which ones to go back to if a mission just goes
Fallout
sour.
Fallout does this all the time.
Yeah, I don't like doing that. And like next week when Fire Emblem comes out, I'm probably not going to save scum it. But with this, it's like I will replay a mission 5 times in a night.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if things go really, really bad, I will just like reload either before the mission or during the mission to like a better point and just reevaluate things and
gotcha
and take it from there. But yeah, people should definitely play it. I encourage you guys to play it too. Yeah. At some point, I'd probably wait for a Steam sale because I know, like, you, Henry, Max, probably it's not your type of game.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I wonder if I think Max was into it because Max was the one who pushed pushed the Bureau on me, and I really enjoyed the Bureau. The problem is, I probably enjoyed the Bureau for reasons that don't really line up.
Yeah.
With XCOM.
Yeah, it'll be different. But yeah. You should try Massive Chalice, I guess.
I think I have it downloaded. I think I played a couple of minutes of it.
I think XCOM is very cheap right now on Steam.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Or on iPad. It's on iPad.
Yeah, the biggest issue is as an Xbox One user, I don't... it's unfortunate it's not on that console.
Yeah.
I think I understand it for how it's... plays, but...
The first XCOM worked so well with a controller that I'm surprised that they didn't bring that in there because the controls really aren't different.
Okay.
Like the way you command your squads aren't different. They have Steam controller support in beta right now. I haven't tried it yet, but that controller is just weird to begin with. They should just plug in like Xbox One controller support.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if they have a version of that in the next year for consoles, but there's no plans right now.
Moving on to Unravel, which I kind of the second big release recently. Mm-hmm. This was a game I was kind of interested in. It's a puzzler. I think that's probably the best way to
describe it.
Yeah,
like a puzzle platformer.
And literally you're this little yarn man, this red yarn
Yarny.
Man, who's going through, Yarny, who's going through the memories of an old lady, right?
I think so.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. It seems like from the reviews I read, and I haven't played, have you played it at all, John?
No, I haven't.
And Nick, you haven't played it at all, right?
I haven't.
From the reviews I read, it's a great experience at first, and then it doesn't get much different. And I've heard it's kind of you get through it in order to get through the story, which is rather worth it. But it's not something I'm going to go out and get. I was curious about it, and I feel like there's probably something there if you really enjoy these games. But I feel like it loses kind of the hardcore puzzler people because it's not that hard or it's not that unique.
Yeah.
And it probably loses the casual fan. Just because unless the storyline really drives you, and I hear it actually wraps up really well and gets to the ending really well, it's not an incredibly compelling character. It's a ball of yarn.
It was designed to be cute.
Yeah, and I really like how it looks.
Yeah.
Like it does look like yarn, and the environments are really cool. Nick, have you seen any screenshots or any like video of this?
Yeah, I've seen some footage from it. It's using the Fire Engine. I was just checking that out. That's the same engine that's run games like Journey, which came out a few years ago, and the indie 1v1 hit Dive Kick. So,
I love Dive Kick.
Yeah, they're actually using they're using a Sony owned game engine for this.
Yeah, so I mean, I think it technically it works, right? I mean, I think it looks good. It seems like I don't think people have had issues with it. At least I haven't read that.
Not really, no.
And I feel like it may be just a game that's worth waiting out. Getting at a lower price point, so sure. It's not going to devastate you if you like end it and they're like, yeah, that wasn't mind blowing.
I think it's like $20 or something.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a
so I mean
game,
$20 probably is
it's not too bad.
Fine, yeah.
I guess there is one other big release this week, but I haven't played it, which is Firewatch.
Okay, yeah, no, I should include
that. We'll talk about that probably next week.
Yeah, Nick, do you have any opinions on that or anything to say about it?
No, I just I've seen that it's been getting a lot of a lot of acclaim. So that's good.
Yeah, it's I've seen people who either just like love it or are very disappointed by it. So I'm interested to kind of dig in and see where I land.
It looks
on
cool, kind of the art design.
Yeah,
and
it's a beautiful looking game. You're just a guy in a fire tower watching for fires and communicating with your superior over your walkie.
Yeah,
the whole game seems cool.
Fallout patch 1.3. Unfortunately, this is Henry and Max are the big Fallout. Have you gone back to it?
No.
No. Like, so December is literally the last time you played it.
Yeah. Actually, I think it was November.
Oh, really?
I played it.
Going back
then?
I can't believe it came out then. That's funny.
Yeah. So Fallout has a new console update. It looks like they've increased object fading distances, which kind of helps. A lot, like,
and the graphics are improved. I mean, I'm just looking at it. How much do you think it fixed? Just like there's certain missions you can't do, and certain places you can't go, and just like some of this probably is just fundamental flaws that you gotta work around.
It does say it fixes mission related issues, and the way Vault 81 residents dismember, which
Yeah, super weird that that's like what they promoted.
Which is kind of, well, that's like one of those funny patch notes that you put in. It's like, that's,
we know
that this is an issue. This is kind of funny. Let's put it in.
And this is something, Nick, that didn't captivate you, right? Did you play Fallout 3 or New Vegas or any of that stuff?
Usually if I'm going to play a game like that, it's going to be Elder Scrolls. I kind of pick and choose my open world games selectively so that I, you know.
Yeah, you only have so much time in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, for some reason, I kind of went this direction as opposed to Skyrim. And Skyrim's probably something I'll get back into or whatever. But I like the game. The biggest issue I had, and I told you this, John, on the last show, which was, I think, 2 weeks ago, but I finished up Fallout, and then the patch comes out, and I'm like, well, the biggest issue is, I think, to get back into it, you really have to start a new character.
Yeah.
I mean, you can kind of tell.
You finished the game?
Yeah.
No? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got to, like, the
twist. I forgot
twist.
You were gone. Yeah, no, I've gotten to the twist and finished it up. Yeah, I don't know if you were here the week Henry and I were arguing, because Henry finished like right away, right?
Yeah.
And he wanted to talk about spoilers, and none of us were done. And so I think it's something, we're not going to spoil it this round at all, but on this show. But yeah, I mean, there are some interesting things. For a guy like you, Nick, I don't think you missed out on a ton. You'd really have to like the wasteland and like, you know, kind of the
Americana.
Yeah, the experience
all that,
of it.
Yeah.
And I think it's really well done. I mean, it shoots a lot better. The Fallout 3 and New Vegas were not good as shooters. Graphically, it looks good. The place is more interesting. In fact, I almost want him to go back to Washington to see what a new age, you know, DC would look like. And it's fine. There are some decisions to be made, but I don't think it's, I don't know. I mean, I think it's one of those things, and I get where you're coming from, Nick. You only got so much time, and you kind of have to choose what you're going to do with these open world games. Because I probably put in, I'd say 60 hours, probably more.
That sounds right.
To get through it. Yeah. And I haven't gone through every nook and cranny or anything yet either.
You have time.
Yeah. No, I
all year.
And actually, you know, the nice thing going back to the releases, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Like, Mortal Kombat XL comes out
March 1st,
and I think that's when Primal comes out too.
Primal's 2 weeks from now.
Oh, is it 2 weeks from now? So, I mean, I'll look at Primal a little bit. I don't know. You know, I look at it this way. I actually have some time to go through back to Rare Replay, back to Diablo, and play as some different characters. I actually am kind of enjoying this free period because I literally just played Fallout for a while.
I am the complete opposite right now because this is anything XCOM. but my free period, because it's XCOM this week. It was The Witness.
Yeah, I know you got into that. Yeah.
It is Street Fighter on Tuesday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Which, not for PlayStation.
Fire Emblem Fates is that Friday, and that's three games technically, and then like Far Cry.
You're going to get killed. Yeah. Are you hyped for Far Cry?
Yeah.
Yeah, cuz I'm kind of interested. Nick, where are you at? Are you swamped? Do you have a big backlog right now, or are you just kind of cruising that through?
Like I was kind of mentioning to you before, I mostly play when it comes to our actual events that we run. I mean, that kind of gives me my gaming fix.
Yeah.
I try to think that my games are now just, you know, collector items.
That's so funny.
Instead of things that I need to go into and, you know, spend 20 hours on at average.
What's your favorite game to play during your events?
My favorite game to play during our events? Good question. We play a lot of multiplayer games that are made by, you know, smaller development teams.
Sure.
So some of these indie titles are actually making their way to like larger event competitions, like Towerfall Ascension. That's a good one.
That's really good.
Nidhogg, which is an excellent 1v1 game. Have you ever heard about that or played it?
Yeah. We've had some, at least with some of my friends, we've had some long nights playing Nidhogg and just swearing at each other, throwing swords at each other.
How do you spell this? Nidhogg?
Nidhogg.
Okay.
You should check it out. It's really great. Like Samurai Gun, would that be one?
Absolutely, yeah.
Trying to think. Gang Beasts.
Gang Beasts. Lethal League.
Oh.
The Duck Game.
Oh, yeah. The Duck Game.
Yeah, that's another one that we like. I think that there's actually, at GDC around that time, there's going to be something called the Indie Olympics, and it's, you know, probably going to attract a few hundred people.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just a few indie games like Duck Game and Towerfall. I forget what else, but, hey, Gang Beasts could even be on there, too.
Yeah.
Their developer's actually in San Francisco.
Isn't that Double Fine for Gang Beasts?
It is, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
How much do you run into people who have are involved with those? I mean, I got to imagine you're probably in one of the hottest areas for for indie game development or game development in general?
Yeah, we do have people in our club who either work for developers or publishers or have experience, or obviously they're just, you know, like one connection away. We had somebody who was working at Cryptic Games. Cryptic now, I think that their main platform is, or their main IP is DC Universe Online, I think. So yeah, we had a guy working there, and now he's making his own games independently. There is actually down here a museum that preserves and occasionally exhibits, you know, old hardware and artifacts from like the, you know, 70s.
Huh. And which group is that?
It's called the Digital Game Museum.
Okay.
So, yeah. We've done some fundraising before. They're a great group. And like the director's son works for Tryon Studios in Redwood City. So they are the ones who produce, they've got Rift, that was kind of while ago. Yep. They're also doing Arc Age, Trove, some other games. So, yeah, I mean, just coming to these shows, we do meet a lot of people who are connected to the industry, people who've, you know, written for publications too.
For you guys, what is the indie appeal? Like, I've dabbled, but and I understand the appeal of certain ones, but is it because you know these people and understand the development, or do you just like kind of that era of gaming, kind of the 8-bit look and all that?
Yeah, I think that it brings us back to the familiarity that we grew up on. In this case, I wasn't even an indie gamer. I had, you know, reported for some small development projects before I actually started the club. And then one of my friends, David, he just showed up. He said, hey, there are some great indie multiplayer games. And I said, hey, you know, why don't we try something different? And he puts on this game, Towerfall Ascension, which is kind of like... I want to say it's kind of like Samurai again with bows and arrows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it kind of just took off from there. Yeah, I think he is one person I would definitely credit for that. So, yeah, it just feels kind of like we're, you know, back in the 90s in a sense.
Yeah, no, that's some interesting stuff. Unless you guys have got anything else, we should probably talk about Assassin's Creed, kind of big news coming out of there.
Sure.
So they're skipping 2016. This... I've told John this, Nick, but I was the kind of guy, I almost bought those games kind of sight unseen. Like, I'd maybe look at a review or something, just make sure it didn't tank.
You just had to have the next Assassin's Creed.
I really enjoyed the first two.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, honestly, Black Flag was probably my favorite. I just liked the pirate aspect. And again, some of these were very discombobulated with the story, but you always felt like there was something cool happening, even if you didn't totally understand it, or like they didn't really wrap it up. Like, they just kind of left it hanging. But
you didn't have to complete the story to enjoy the game.
Yeah, no, that's completely right. I mean, you always kind of felt like you were in the moment. They always, I feel like, were very well designed in terms of you felt like you were actually assassinating people, which is important, or scaling up walls or whatever. And Unity kind of turned me off from it. And, John, did you play Syndicate, Nick?
I didn't play Syndicate. I played some Unity, though.
Okay. And, John, you played Syndicate.
I played Syndicate, yeah.
Have you gotten through it?
No.
Okay. Because I hear sweet game until the end, and you're kind of like, huh, that's how it ends. But
I've heard, like, the ending of it is actually a little bit more intriguing than, than past entries. Because it sets up stuff for, like... It hooks into, like, stuff that happened in, like, 2 or Brotherhood.
Okay.
And sets it up for something bigger going on. Because it seemed like it was, like, the series was, because it has its present-day stuff or, like, near-future stuff.
Right,
and then the stuff in the past. And it seems like they just kind of dropped off the near-future stuff. And, like yeah, we kind of see stuff that's, like, a faux Ubisoft, like, game developer.
Yeah,
but nothing big's happening there. We're just going back in time and assassinating people. But now they're opening it back up to, like, all right,
this is
why the Templars and the Assassins are still fighting. And...
and Nick, I hear Unity is a good experience once they fixed it, right?
I actually kind of abandoned ship after I had, you know, played about a dozen hours of it. It just didn't seem like it was going anywhere. So I actually just kind of dropped off. And uninstalled it, you know.
Really?
These consoles, you gotta clear your hard space for your hard drive for the next game that you're actually gonna take seriously.
Yeah. So that, in my mind, I understand how this is being reported. Some people, obviously, the stray reporters are just telling you it, but some people are kind of describing, you know, Ubisoft and Assassin's Creed skipping 2016 as like a bummer or a setback. I see it kind of like when Deus Ex when, you know, they kind of, it wasn't a full year, but they dropped back like 5 months or something. I see it like that. Get it right. And I'm the kind of person who, look, I understand there's patches and stuff like that, but I was really thrilled when Fallout 4 came out and it wasn't broken.
Yeah.
And that's sad, but it's true. And I think this is the right thing. Get it right. So wait a year and really do it right and get someone like me who really enjoyed it in the beginning kind of back into the game.
The good thing... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, though, like, my concern, though, is 1 year enough time to get it right?
Yeah.
You know, because you're talking about a franchise that's developed not just by one large studio, you know, like Ubisoft Toronto or Montreal, but you're talking about something that's actually developed across several different studios in probably, you know, one of the most complex arrangements of talent and development and management. So that's something that, you know, I can't be as optimistic as I want to be, you know, given some of the, for example, the technical issues and, you know, they also have to kind of just, you know, improve the overall experience so that we get something that's a little bit fresh to us, a little, you know, a little wild and out there. So I'm not actually sold on it entirely.
Did you guys read that? There was some guy from Ubisoft who basically, I think he maybe got fired or left or something and wrote, I don't know if it was on his personal blog or whatever. It was publicized, though. I saw it through Kotaku about how discombobulated that is. That literally, like, you have to coordinate, as you were saying, Nick, across all these studios, multiple people, and just barriers. I'm sure there's time barriers and in some cases perhaps a language barrier or even just kind of the more technical, you know, jargon. Yeah. There may be a barrier there, but I, you know, that's an interesting point. I kind of looked at it and took it for granted. Like, look, a year I'll straighten it out. But I guess if you guys are Ubisoft, what would you do to get this right? Because they have a lot going for them. They have the history of the game and stuff like that, but they have stumbled recently here.
I would try to rethink things a bit. This has been an annual franchise for, gosh, like, it was like 6 years something.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely fatigue for Assassin's Creed, kind of like there's fatigue for Call of Duty. And even like when Unity came out alongside another Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, that's right.
So
Rogue.
Like there were two that same day.
Yeah.
So giving the series a little bit of time to breathe, a little bit of time to reinvent the Assassin's Creed wheel, if you will, I think it's a good thing because I'm kind of tired of it. I'm kind of tired of the series.
Yeah.
I want to play another one. I want to have a good reason to play another one. And I think if they skip this year, that's fine. Also, there's reports coming out now that there'll be a new Watch Dogs game
by spring
2017. So that could be a fall game for them.
What are your thoughts here, Nick?
I think that when you look at these franchises in total, so I'm talking Assassin's Creed, Watch Dogs, The Division, you know, they're all these supposedly these massive open world games, right? And I'm not going to come to a conclusion on The Division just yet, but you know that there are suspicions out there about the game's, you know, its actual technical performance when, you know, when you have to run it on computer if it looks too much like it's from the console, right? The whole idea that they're not pushing PC hardware. And so my point here is that, like, they haven't been able to execute these ideas, you know, to the hype that they and the media have built it up to, right? So that's why, you know, I think that they need to take 2016 to evaluate, you know, how, you know, what they need to do to actually make these larger ambitions of theirs come true for customers, right?
Yep.
But, I mean, it's not going to get any better with the console's hardware, so... You know, they might actually have to make some sacrifices to make the game run more efficiently and to make the, I guess, the sort of user experience and the features, you know, more streamlined and kind of downsized. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's a bummer. It was released November 13th, 2007. I just remember that first game. You knew that it had flaws and that it could be improved upon. I feel like 2 was kind of widely claimed as the one that
got... 2 was great.
Yeah.
2 was awesome.
Fixed upon that. And I remember kind of there was almost like a sense of wonder, just like, where could this go? You know, and it's unfortunate. I'm with you both you guys.
Well, that was the last time they took 2 years to put out a game.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, and it's just, I understand that it's a business and all that, but yeah, they got to get it right, because if they nail this one, it'll get me right back in there. I mean, I think it'll be kind of almost forgiven or whatever with this series. Any final thoughts, guys, or should we move on here?
I'm cool with moving.
All right. Ubisoft sales missed expectations, and publishers says they expect a big fourth quarter. This is maybe kind of related. I always, with business stuff, you got to be careful just because there's a lot going on. But it does, to me, and this is, again, just a layman's opinion, it does seem a little bit that they're reaping kind of what they've sown with some of the products here. Even with Watch Dogs, which is so hyped, I feel like a lot of people said the first bit was great, and then it kind of looked old or whatever, and people kind of got sick of the game there. Although I feel like that financially did really well. But I'm only surprised just because you have The Division driving a lot of attention to the company. Yep. Again, Far Cry Primal, and I thought they did a great job with Far Cry 3, actually. But 4 followed it up. You got Primal coming out. What were you saying, Nick?
I was just, 4 was pretty good, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I I'm kind of surprised, but again, it's, we're not a business podcast or whatever. I think it's news for all of us just because it is part of video games, and it is kind of, maybe they're on shaky ground, and if anything, it's to their credit. They're not going to release an Assassin's Creed game just to kind of make money. They are going to get it right, hopefully. And I think their long-term prospects are probably just fine.
Yeah, I have a feeling that Rainbow Six kind of took a dive.
Yeah, that's right. Max brought that up too.
Yeah, so that probably didn't do as well for them as they thought it would go. But what can you do there?
Moving on here, Quantum Break is no longer Xbox exclusive, and
I have seen so many people pissed about this, and I don't get it.
I don't get it, if anything, because an Xbox One is kind of close to a PC.
Yeah, yeah. So it's coming to Xbox One and PC now. The people that I saw, at least on Twitter, arguing with Phil Spencer, the main man himself from Xbox, they were saying that this was dastardly and manipulative, that they said that this whole time that it was supposed to be an Xbox One game and only an Xbox One game.
It was supposed to release be a title release, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, launch release. Yeah.
But now it's coming out in April, and today they decided to announce that there's a PC version that's coming out too, which is great because a lot of people who own PCs, a lot of people own Xboxes.
Yeah.
Let's just get this game to as many people as possible.
And there just aren't many exclusives anymore.
No, there aren't. But they're both technically Microsoft products.
Yeah.
Because it's Windows.
Snoop Dogg's going to yell at Bill Gates. Nick, do you have any thoughts on this one?
Not too much. Is it going to be cross-platform, or have they not confirmed that yet?
I don't believe so. I'm looking at it right
probably
now.
Probably not. I believe it's mostly single player. I don't know if there's multiplayer stuff. Do you mean cross-buy? Like if you buy it on one, you get it on the other?
Oh no, just being able to play somebody. If I'm on Xbox, could I play you on PC?
I don't know if it has multiplayer.
They should do that. I thought they did. I don't know. That's a good question.
I know they're doing that for games like Fable Legends and for Killer Instinct.
Yeah, yeah.
When those come out for PC.
Have you guys checked this out at all? I mean, it looks interesting. I kind of worry about it being a sweet first impression, but not sustainable for hours on end.
Does some cool time travel or time stopping tricks.
Yeah.
But could get boring.
And integrates video, right?
I mean,
it's like a TV show.
Yeah. Kinda. So you'll play an episode of the game and then you'll watch a 20-minute episode of the TV show. And that happens five times.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Destiny 2 delayed until 2017. New expansion due this year. What are they going to do with Destiny 2? Is it supposed to completely...
I mean, it seems
like a new game, even still.
Yeah, they're going to have to find a way to bring on the progress of the people who played Destiny 1. Whether they're going to keep the same world or not, that remains to be seen. They haven't really said anything about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to end up doing.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and I'm looking forward to hearing about it, but we probably won't hear until after this expansion's out what Destiny 2 is actually going to be.
Nick, did you ever get into this game?
No, I didn't. I played a little bit of the alpha, and I said, that's not it for me, that's not the shooter I'll be playing this year.
That's very fair.
It was something where... When I was playing it, I was just like, well, if I want to play a game that's kind of like this, even though it's not online, I can kind of get a similar experience with Borderlands, right?
And yeah, yeah.
It comes with a sense of humor. I don't need to like pay an additional $10 for that. So, but yeah, I think that, you know, it's been able to support its community just kind of inconsistently. So I agree, John, on your point that the player progression is one thing that needs to be, you know, smoothened out.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't know about that like whole initial level 20 cap. That seems bizarre to me. I don't care how long it takes to level up to that, but yeah.
Yeah, I felt like it was one of those things. I actually kind of enjoyed it because it reminded me of Borderlands. I agree that Borderlands, I think, is a superior product, and this is, again, one man's opinion. But it's weird. I think you probably identified it better than me, Nick. I looked at the alpha, and I was like, oh, this looks interesting. Bought the game, and I feel like I just kind of got suckered into getting the next one, the Taken King, because yeah. I was like, oh, I put down money. And like I think they actually did do some good things with the Taken King. Cinematically, it's better. There seems to be a story.
Yeah.
It's a little more consistent. But I never got into it, you know, like my roommate from college, thinking about, you know, Nick and all that. You know, that kid plays this religiously, right? I mean, he can't play enough. Zach LaVine, Minnesota Timberwolves basketball player, he told me straight up, he's like, I play video games and basketball, and I'm pretty sure he goes from the basketball court to Destiny. And so, you know, I certain people are just, you know, kind of enamored by the game, or it kind of sucks you in. I kind of wonder if they could do anything with Destiny 2 to change that, or it's just maybe they're trying to capitalize on it more and make sure that, you know, if you like Destiny 1, Destiny 2 kind of blows your mind or maybe makes up for some of the faults with the original game. Yeah. I don't know.
They might have to just make good on what they wanted Destiny 1 to be. And once again, just taking a little bit more time to polish that up.
Yeah, and I'm not under the impression that they'll lose steam. I mean, it just seems like people who love the game are...
I think they're kind of losing steam right now, mainly because they're not releasing the expansions like they did last year.
That's true. That's true.
Well, they do have the new bigger expansion coming out later this year, a la The Taken King. But like their live events, like they have one that started like yesterday that's a Valentine's Day event. They've had like the racing stuff, the Halloween stuff. That hasn't really hit too hard.
No, I think you have to be a fan first, and it's just enough.
Yeah,
to kind of,
even for fans, it's not enough.
Yeah, I heard the racing thing wasn't that great. I don't know. Kind of interesting stuff going on with there. Mm-hmm. Titanfall 2 will have single player and a TV spinoff. Did you guys play this game?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah. Titanfall is great.
Because what about you, Nick?
Yeah, I like it. It was pretty fun, just like obviously being able to take down these big mechs, even on foot. And I think that the kind of the weapon drop system or the power up kind of system with that was, you know, familiar, but it kind of made sense for that game. So yeah, I mean that's good to hear that they're going to build even a better core experience around that with single player. And not too many shooters decide to go in that direction, so this is almost a breath of fresh air, I think.
Yeah, you know, when it first came out, first of all, I think it came out at the right time. There was kind of hype around the new system and all that, and it did feel like a different experience at the very least.
Yeah.
I enjoyed playing it, and I agree that I think it needed a single-player campaign. I liked the idea of what they were trying to do, make it online. It just was not great in execution, and maybe there's just no way to really execute that well, to be honest. I'll be curious kind of how it, you know, comes in the mix now that you have Destiny, Call of Duty still out there, stuff like that. And I think, I don't know, I enjoyed it as a shooter. There wasn't a ton that kind of keep me going back to it. I mean, I feel like it's uninstalled.
There was a lack of content.
Yeah.
It was a small game, and it's, they're going to be building upon what they have there. Like, they have cool mobility. They've got mechs.
Yeah.
They have just a really neat idea for a shooter.
Fun environments and good shooting mechanics.
Yeah, they just need to build on it. It sounds like it's supposed to be coming out later this year.
Is what are they going to do with the TV series? I just can't think of. I'm just curious. What the is it going to be? Kind of
just make it like Gundam. Just a cool live action Gundam.
Any final thoughts here, Nick?
No.
Red Dead Redemption. Yeah, that's my Alabama twang
like
coming out.
That Redemption.
Backwards compatibility. It just hasn't happened. This is a weird story where people were really hyped. It's in my mind one of my favorite games from the old consoles. It would seem like a natural fit, you know, kind of as a selling point for the Xbox One, because this is this is a game I kind of want to play on my next-gen system, considering my old 360 sounds like a four-cylinder engine
Do you know what happened with this story? Like, this weekend, people found out that you could actually play Red Dead Redemption on your Xbox One. Someone figured out that it was up on the store. If you owned it digitally on Xbox 360, you could download the Xbox One copy of it and start playing. They took that down. They took it down really fast. But apparently they were just testing.
Weird.
They're doing tests for like multiple games. Some of the other games that were actually up that aren't available are Castlevania Symphony of the Night. What was another one?
I'm looking at
Halo Wars.
Wars, Left 4 Dead 2.
Yeah. So there were quite a few like pretty high profile games that they were testing out.
Do you think it's buggy? I mean, it's a big game. Like, you would not want to get halfway through this game.
I watched some footage of it. It looked smooth. Yeah. It looked nice. And my experience with the 360 backwards compatibility stuff is it just works really well.
I'll get into that with the games I'm playing, but like Rare Replay, for example. You got to place a great package there. Mm-hmm. What Nick, where did this one rank for you kind of among those last gen system games?
Red Dead, I think that, you know, that's pretty much toward the top. I mean, my other favorite game or franchise that's from the previous gen is Mass Effect. I know a lot of people would say like Uncharted would be up there for them, Last of Us, but like Red Dead is like easily top three for me. And interestingly enough, I mean, Rockstar has been keeping pretty quiet recently, right? I know this is not exactly related to this, but you know, this year I'm kind of expecting for them to come out with an announcement. If it's not for Red Dead, it better be for some cool new IP, but I think that's one of the bullets in the chamber there.
I would I could see him pulling a Bethesda, right, and just like being like, in 4 months there's gonna be something sweet. Like, maybe this is wishful thinking, but when they did that, like, I love Bethesda.
It could be
right
the
now.
Next month, like that. No, it's so like they're bad. Very secretive.
Yeah, and the one thing about Rockstar is that they are big in scope. They kind of go big or go home. And everything that comes out is pretty polished. I can't think... Now, Grand Theft Auto Online, which I'll talk about in the games I'm playing, still has bugs.
Open world games in general, there's going to be some jank.
Yeah. But like Red Dead, I remember playing through, and I'm sure there were patches. I don't remember patches. I don't remember anything wonky with it. And it's like three stories in one. I mean, I remember like getting to certain points. In fact, at the very end, I was like, I think I'm done. And Max, like 2 months afterwards, was like, yeah, you didn't finish the game.
Yeah.
You know, it's really well done. And I just don't get why. And again, you want it to come out right. And going back to the Assassin's Creed stuff, you want it to be playable right away. But God, you feel like this is a must have on the Xbox One, right?
Yep. And it's really up to Rockstar to make that available, whether they are making it available and that's why they're testing, or if Microsoft is just getting things ready in case someone like wants to flip the Switch, which they should flip that Switch.
Nick, how much do you do backwards compatibility? I know you're into the old systems and stuff like that.
It's funny because I've been playing those same games on the older systems now because we've had so many that have been donated to us, or, you know, as we get larger, there are more people who can actually bring the old systems in. I mean, I love that there's backwards compatibility. So that's how, like, we've had Halo 1 battles with four system-linked Xbox 360s. So, yeah.
That's sweet. Do you have issues with 360s? I mean, maybe it's just mine, and I'm sure you know this, Nick. Like, Wags, my roommate from college, played so much, I think it just killed it. But my Xbox 360 legitimately sounds like a car engine. Like, it's so ridiculously loud. And I know people have issues with inserting the disc and kind of the disc drive, or just even connections to their TV. I mean, given that you probably have a lot of hardware that you have to manage, is 360 difficult for you? I mean, how does it compare to other systems?
That's a really good question. We haven't run into any issues with 360 as far as long as we've been around. I replaced my console back in 2010. I did get a Red Ring of Death with, you know, one of the original versions. But yeah, hardware wise, I mean, we're at this point now where, you know, we have multiple GameCubes that have been donated, multiple PlayStation 2s and that sort of thing. So it's almost like if we have a problem with one console, we have a replacement ready for it.
What's how popular is the GameCube? Because we've talked about this on the show. I always, Nintendo kills me because 64, I mean, you know this, Nick. I had one in college, and I still – we played that as though it was a new system. And there was legitimate, like, bragging rights on the line with you know, Smash and some Mario Kart and some of these. And GameCube, I think, did some things right. Double Dash, I'm not as bullish as you guys are, I think, on it.
I enjoy that game. Best.
I feel like, you know, with some of these other, you know, Smash, I'd probably play the 64 one a little bit more. And there's – I actually loved Mario Tennis and Golf, but how popular is the GameCube among kind of your player base there?
It's very big. I think one reason why is because it just kind of makes what happened on the 64 better, and obviously, you know, with the graphics upgrade, it's a smoother experience. And so, you know, playing Double Dash for us is something that's pretty popular. Smash Melee, I mean, Smash Bros. Is unquestionably the most popular game for us. So having all those characters and the actual still running competitive scene for Melee on GameCube is pretty remarkable. There are some other quality games there.
It's crazy. It's the staying power of Melee just blows my mind.
And I don't get it, because I actually like the — maybe this is a hot take, but I actually like the Wii one better. I feel like the Wii one did what Melee did, but expanded the character base and more
competitively levels. They took out a lot of the more advanced tactics, like they added tripping. Like, you'll just randomly trip
sometimes.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
They took out things like wave dashing and some different, like, air control stuff. So that's why competitive players prefer Melee over Brawl, and actually prefer the Wii U version over Brawl.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Anyways, we should — I just want to give a shout out to this dude. It's Crank is the pro player's name, I think, who tried to play StarCraft and Hearthstone at the same time. Nick, are you into these games at all, the Blizzard stuff?
Not the new IP. I'm a little interested in Overwatch, though.
Yeah, no, I'm actually kind of pumped for Overwatch. I feel like it's what I wanted out of Destiny, actually. But I know, John, you play Hearthstone and
occasionally,
And StarCraft.
StarCraft, World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Diablo.
Yeah, I'm a bigger —
most of them.
Yeah, I'm a bigger Diablo guy. I played the original StarCraft, but I just got to give props to a dude who, like — I've tried to do this before. I have trouble playing Hearthstone when, like, GTA is loading. You know, like, I just get distracted by things pretty easily. But I gotta love it. This dude has ambition, and Hearthstone's one of those games you always feel like you can sneak it in, like, right, you know, at any time. I don't know. Just want to give a shout out to this dude.
And he totally can. This guy totally can.
Hey, he's a pro. That's what these guys do.
Speaking of Hearthstone, have you heard about the new changes that they're going to be making to the game?
I know they're making changes.
Okay.
Can you enlighten us?
Pretty big. So what they're doing is they're rolling out a system. Like, basically, they're splitting the game into two modes.
Right, right.
So there's going to be what they call Classic Mode. I believe it's Classic. And then Wild Mode. So what Classic is they're going to start discontinuing cards.
So you will no longer
be able to play ranked games in Classic with, like, the gnomes and goblins.
Gotcha.
Sets.
Is that one better? When I buy packs, I always buy the newest expansion, not the gnomes.
Yeah, you're going to want to start buying the newest expansion, because the older ones are going to be discontinued.
Gotcha.
Like, they're not even going to be selling those cards anymore.
Even the original, like, straight
like
up?
The original set will still be available. That's part of the base set for Classic.
Gotcha.
But, like, the first, like, adventure won't be available anymore.
Really?
Like, they won't even be selling it to play.
Because that's the spiders, right?
Yeah.
Is that Naxxramas or whatever?
Yeah, Naxxramas.
Yeah.
Yep. So, like, cards from that won't be available in that mode. It's only going to be cards that were released within 2 years.
Okay, gotcha.
So, like, going forward later this year, they're going to start retiring cards.
Okay.
Which is interesting, but also when you have so many cards going into play, like, the balance of everything gets way out of whack. So this helps them kind of just balance ranked play.
That makes sense.
Wild mode is you can use any of the cards.
Which is cool.
But you won't be able to buy the packs for some of the older sets. So you could still build them with Strange Dust. Is that what it is?
Yeah, and I need to figure that out.
Yeah,
so you could still
craft cards and get cards that you want for that mode.
Yeah.
And, like, the arena will still be the same, and Tavern Brawl will still be the same as it ever was. But It's falling in line with collectible card games or trading card games like Magic the Gathering. They do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like you can't use cards from like the 90s in competitive play unless it's been reprinted recently.
Okay, gotcha.
So,
gotcha. Nick, you said you're not a big Hearthstone guy.
What's that?
Are you a big Hearthstone guy?
Nah, I'm not.
Yeah, so I feel like this, it must just be our community. It was Max who got me into it.
Yeah, it's Max.
And it, Trevor May, we'll try to get on one of the Twins relievers. Actually, you're a Twins fan, right?
Yeah, you know, they're my AL team.
Yeah, so Giants fan, Twins fan. Trevor May, one of the relievers on the team, has been on our show through a 2.5-hour marathon for E3, right?
Yeah.
And he's a huge gamer. Honest to God, huge gamer.
And so you guys got him hooked on Hearthstone.
Yeah,
right?
And then all of a sudden the Twins locker room, like last year there was probably like 9 dudes playing this. It was so funny.
It's easy to get into. It's hard to leave.
Yeah, it's good stuff. But I do like the changes they're making. I hope it cripples Max, because Max has literally gotten, like, first of all, that kid has spent more money than he admits on it. I think he said 200 on the show.
Yeah.
I feel like it's north of that. And
he's this guy getting all his money anyway?
He's well employed and probably like not eating
Hearthstone cards.
I don't know what that kid's doing. He's probably some illegal Hearthstone trade or something. But yeah, no, he's and he like killed Henry. Like Henry was into that game until he played.
And Henry's
Max.
So salty about it. Like,
I know. He's so
pay to win.
I also think Max straight up beat him.
Yeah. Of course he did. It's a card in his deck. Like Henry could have that card in his deck.
Yeah.
Like it's not
Max is ridiculous though. I can play with most people online.
Yeah.
That kid, like him and Callie, who's been on the show too, his girlfriend, like I play them and I just look at it. I'm like, I've never seen a game play out like this. I don't even know. You're on just a different level.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some crazy stuff. Do you want to tell us about Street Fighter? I know you're going to know more than I do.
Yeah. So Street Fighter V comes out on Tuesday. Capcom released some information about what kind of content is going to be dropping throughout the next few months. So they have a set of DLC characters, one per month for the next like 6 months. Alex is going to be the first one. He's a Street Fighter 3 character. One thing that they kind of like hid in there was online lobbies up to 8 people isn't dropping until March. So that's not going to be in the game right away.
Okay.
So you can't get together with all of your friends online and like set up a little tournament.
Which seems like something they should probably do.
They should probably have that right at launch. Like they're not going to have their story mode right away. They said that last month it's going to be in June.
That's fine. That's understandable.
I'm all right with that. Like they have like the arcade mode where you can see everyone's like pre-story or like prologue to the actual like big story that's coming in June. Let's see here. There was something else that was really
Nick,
big.
Is this a big game among your community?
Absolutely. Yeah. I would say that it's probably the most popular fighting franchise. I wouldn't call Smash Bros. A fighting franchise. Street Fighter definitely. We're actually having a Street Fighter V button mash, as we call it, at somebody's house next weekend.
Good.
Yeah. Actually, we're going to be surprising our event host by giving him a Blu-ray copy of the Street Fighter movie. So,
that's epic. That's awesome.
You laughed out of that.
For me, it was a Tuesday.
Yeah. I feel like we had this conversation last week too.
Yeah. So with this also with those lobbies, online spectating is going to be hitting in March as well. Which those are things that should be there on Tuesday.
Yeah.
Like let's be honest, I was setting up a stream for Tuesday where like my friends and I play Street Fighter online and we usually stream it. But we probably can't efficiently do that.
Yeah.
Because it can only be two of us in a lobby at a time.
Yeah,
which is kind of weird, and like the other people like just waiting to play can't watch unless they're watching our stream.
Yeah, is this a big deal for you, Nick, or is just because you guys are all in the same room, it probably doesn't matter as much?
Not as much in terms of our actual events, but we're gonna have people who play against each other online, I'm sure. So they're probably gonna be painfully waiting for a little while there.
Yeah.
These are the same people who, like, we have a handful of people who will go to Evo and they'll be watching streamers for all of this as well. So it's like, it's going to kind of, the community is going to be kind of waiting for a while, I would think.
And as far as I know, California, especially in your area, is a a big place for just like actual tournaments. Like the tournament scene there is pretty huge. People getting together and playing Street Fighter at a venue. So like this stuff might not affect a lot of those folks, at least for competitive play. But going online and having that convenience factor.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like everyone's trying to kind of, and Nick, you can talk to this probably more a little bit, but everyone's kind of trying to recreate that arcade feel. Because I mean, there's something about going over to someone's house and kind of doing this on a personal level. Mm-hmm. But I understand that, you know, online you're trying to do that with spectators, but maybe there's something to, you know, like at least the core audience. I feel like there's something about being in person there or something like that. I don't know. Yeah. Is he right in saying that, Nick, that's a big scene out there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The biggest fighting game tournament, at least on the West Coast, is at EVO, which is in Vegas, but a ton of people from California go to that. We do have this one bar in San Francisco that hosts gaming nights, I believe, two times a week, and they have large tournaments otherwise. And so, like, Street Fighter and other fighting games are among the popular games there. Other independent developer projects, so, like, one of the games I mentioned earlier, like Towerfall and Duck Game and those. And then, yeah, in SoCal, I'm pretty sure it's equal, if not more popular over there, too.
You guys ready to talk about ESPN and esports here?
Sure.
So Nick,
I didn't mean to sound so down about that. Sure.
Yeah. No. That's funny. It is. I'm usually the one who talks about this, Nick. Obviously, you were the sports editor at the Santa Clara when I joined. Do you still are you following this kind of ESPN esports deal? Is this something of interest to you?
Oh, I thought you were going to say comment on Santa Clara basketball. It's actually
as bad
as I thought it was going to be. I'm not. I mean, I subscribe to ESPN on Facebook, so a lot, sometimes their content will come in for that. But yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure that other people have likened it to poker, like I have as well. But it's interesting to see it kind of just like creep on in there, and you know, they're following it not just for annual tournaments, right? They're actually following multiple events now, and providing us with coverage all around it, all the time. So it's pretty amazing how, like, all of a sudden now here it is, right? Even though it's been a few years since, esports really made their way into the States, but yeah.
I see this. So, I mean, I just saw kind of them integrate this content recently. I feel like the Wolves were playing like in the Central Time Zone, so it started at 8, and I turned on ESPN just because I usually sit down and watch the games at 7, watch the X Games a little bit, and it caught me by surprise seeing Halo, just because, again, you're kind of expecting something else. I think they could maybe be using different games, but in terms of capturing people's attention, I know people are talking about it. It's something new. It's something that's probably targeting the right audience, because there's a lot of people that like sports and Halo or whatever. It's certainly a product they'll recognize. I didn't see the negative backlash, although I don't think that was warranted when it happened. It did happen internally with Cowherd when he was on ESPN. And I think it's going to capture people's attention. I think they're also going the right direction, where you don't have to get cable to enjoy the product. You can use ESPN's app right now, allows you to watch sports or esports on their standard application, and they're kind of pushing that. And they also did an E60 segment, which is kind of their in-depth. They usually, go in-depth with the life of an athlete or someone affected by sports. They do a good job with these segments when they are on ESPN. And so I think they're taking it seriously. I think their strategy, at least in some capacity, is working. I think you have to go back to, you have to get people attached to the people who are playing esports, because otherwise, it's just like sports in general. I think the biggest fans kind of are attached to the players or certain mm-hmm. personalities in it. And I think they're going about it the right way. I mean, are you someone who would get into ESPN esports, or would it take a while, just given that it's a sports brand and kind of not known for that, I guess?
I mean, for me personally, I would watch like Evo if it was on there. If they break down like why someone is good and like why they're at the top of their game, why I should care about like a certain player, then yeah. I mean, that's something that a lot of like Twitch broadcasts aren't really doing. If they can kind of break it down and put a story to it, like, I mean, that would help.
I noticed
to do with the Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. No, and I think that's a good, because it, the barrier to entry can be tough if you, if it's not kind of pushed on you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I noticed, like, in Game Informer this month, they were trying to offer kind of an entryway for people to get into League of Legends who didn't understand it. Did you read that article? Or are you familiar
with
that?
No, but it sounds like something Gantak would do.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure
he loves him some League.
Yeah. He did push the people behind it. And it's something maybe a magazine or, you know, you can do on TV a little bit better.
And that's something that draws me towards, like, watching fighting games more than watching things like Dota or League or Call of Duty is they're individual people with strong personalities that I can, like, get behind one player or another. Like there's one player that I really liked that my friend didn't because he's personally been an asshole to him. So it's that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
that kind of draws me in.
I mean, I think it, and they do. To my knowledge, people leave teams and there's transactions of some sort or whatever movement.
The Legends of an e-athlete or, you know, whatever you want to call them, an esports competitor. Mm-hmm. It's very, they're very vulnerable, right? Because they could, you know, they could slip in their performance a little bit and they're gone, right?
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's more, a volatile sort of place to be than even being on a professional sports team, right?
Well, and I used this example. You'll appreciate this, Nick. I talked about, you know, some of these hockey players leaving at a young age to kind of hone their craft or whatever. You think of, like, a Patrick Marleau at 14 was playing hockey, away from home or whatever. And it sounds like these young esports players, because it's kind of a young man's game or whatever, like athletics, any athletics. I don't know if it's 14, but it sounds like
it's young.
Yeah,
it is very young.
In baseball, they sign kids from the Dominican at 16. I mean, I think as much as some people are concerned about focusing on one thing too early, it also shows the seriousness of, look, there's money, there's sponsorships, they sell at arenas. And I think in some ways that legitimizes it for certain people.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm interested to see is if, you know, ESPN, if they're working with some of the publishers out there, like EA, to actually, you know, use sports video games as a way of, you know, propelling this more too, right? And getting maybe more people who are interested, or maybe like casual Madden fans, maybe they turn them on to esports or something like that, right?
No, I think that's actually a great idea. And it is, I mean, there are a lot of players for it. I also know it kind of works the other way. I mean, out at, you know, in California, Santa Clara, obviously the Sharks were established. But I remember some people, you know, for me, I played FIFA and got into soccer that way, kind of through the back door.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that with NHL and hockey. So I think there's something to that. You know, sometimes video games or any, you know, media of any sort, entertainment of any sort, can be a pathway from one, you know, one passion to another. So I think that's a good point. Just want to give a short shout out. In general, ESPN has brought in new people, which I think is the right call to do the esports. But and I'm going to butcher this guy's name. I feel terrible. Dan Szymborski, I believe, is a baseball writer who was with Brandon Warren, one of our baseball writers here, who covers the Twins, has the Midwest Swing podcast. You can listen to that part of the network. This guy is a baseball writer who had an esports passion, and when ESPN brought in esports, he has started to cover it.
So he's part of that new group that came on. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you know what game he covers mostly, or is it just like...
I'm trying to remember. I do believe it's the Blizzard products, but maybe
Heroes
Dota.
Storm,
I can't remember.
Hearthstone.
Yeah. I know they talked about it on the podcast. This was a couple of weeks ago. And I think this is more evidence that the crowd's there and that there is crossover, as much as they are probably trying to get people to subscribe to cable who aren't into sports and you know, have cut the cord. I think they're also realizing that, look, this is kind of the same crowd. It's not mutually exclusive where you're a gamer, you're into sports or whatever. So I thought it was cool that you have a guy like that, and Brandon did a good job. Kind of, he's someone who I don't think knows a ton about esports, but actually did a good job fostering the conversation and, to his crowd, which is a baseball-centric crowd, explaining what esports are and kind of why you should get into something like that.
That's awesome.
It was a cool conversation.
To that.
Nick, at this point in the podcast, we talk about kind of what we've been playing and what we've been doing. Do you want to lead us off? Anything that's been kind of capturing your attention right now? What have you been playing?
All right. Well, I'll have to kind of speak on behalf of my club for this. There's this one independent game called, I think it's Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time.
Yep.
It was a multiplayer game where kind of each player assumes different roles with, I don't think it's like commanding a ship. Or John, it sounded like you had heard about this one.
Yeah, it is like different roles on a ship.
Okay.
I believe it. I haven't played it, but
it's crazy graphics.
Yeah,
it's a lot of
looks. It looks really interesting. Everything's very neon colored.
Looks like Miami.
Very stylized.
Yeah. No, that's cool. So that's the big hit right now.
Yeah, that's catching on pretty much event by event. Obviously, we're going to be playing Street Fighter next weekend, and then this weekend we'll be set up at an anime slash gaming event called Animation on Display. That's in Santa Clara, actually, right by.
Cool.
Levi Stadium where the Super Bowl was, so it'll be kind of neat to be over in that area. We'll be setting up a bunch of retro consoles, a bunch of independent games as well. We're having tournaments for Mario Kart,
yeah,
Bomberman, Towerfall Ascension, which is one of our favorite indie games, and another indie game which is called Night Squad. It's also on Xbox One if you're interested to check that out. You can have like up to 8 people playing it, so it's kind of a fun party game, I think.
How much crossover do you get in terms of the people playing? I mean, are there people who are strictly into one and not the other? Or do people kind of dabble with your community?
Absolutely. So we have enthusiasts who know everything about every system, every game, every studio. We have people who mostly just play indie games. My friend David came from a pretty, I don't want to say elitist because he doesn't come off that way, but very passionate PC gamer. But then he moved to playing a lot of smaller independent titles and then kind of like smaller studio projects that will, you know, use some top of the line graphics technology, but they'll put out, games like Warframe, right? So like mm-hmm. shooters like that are with smaller studios. So we have people like that. We have people who play just retro, people who are here just to play fighting games. It's pretty diverse. Kind of our positioning around this is that, gamers of all backgrounds are welcome with us. We're not here to, like, see who's the best at Smash Bros., although we have people who like to compete in that.
Yeah.
So we just want to bring in as many people who just want to enjoy games, whatever kind of game, whatever kind of video game that is, and hopefully just make some friends in the process, and that's pretty much what's been happening the last 2.5 years.
I would understand with the big AAA titles why there would be competition, like a large player base, but with these indies, is it mostly like word of mouth, or is it just kind of once you're part of that scene? I mean, maybe even John, you can talk about this a little bit, but once you're part of that scene, you kind of know what's out there. I mean, how do you develop a huge player base to kind of have a competitive tournament, I guess, with an indie game?
That's a good question. I think that for one, the media has been giving independent games a lot more coverage than they have in the past. And, I think that Steam is a big reason too, because Steam just makes those games so accessible for people. And obviously the sales and whatnot. For us, it's, it gets introduced by somebody at an event. Maybe somebody else has heard of it. If it's a fun 4-player game, then that attracts people's attention. And then we go on to having smaller tournaments. And those are the same kind of games that are being played at that bar I mentioned in San Francisco, where you have, 400, 500 people there a night.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think encouraging too, because that's kind of the crazy thing, especially with digital sales and stuff. You can kind of dabble as much as you want.
Oh, yeah.
You
could see a game that's like $10 and see if it looks interesting, and maybe read about it on like the Steam forums and just see how people are perceiving it. And like a lot of smaller games get a lot better word of mouth these days, whether it's through press outlets or just social media. That's usually where I hear about most of the smaller games that I play is usually social media.
Yeah.
Dive Kick. When Dive Kick was being developed, I followed one of the guys that used to work for shoryuken.com who created Dive Kick. It was just like supposed to be a joke. And then it got picked up by, Iron Galaxy to be a full game.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to find that stuff.
Yeah, makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
John, what about you? What have you been playing?
We talked about XCOM earlier.
Yeah.
I've been working more in The Witness. I'm not going to really spoil much there either.
Yeah.
I'm getting further. I'm getting towards the end, I think.
Yeah.
Lots of puzzles have been taken down. I'm getting to the end. I really like it. When I was at work in the last week, I got a bunch of other people to start playing it, and they kind of dominated our conversation. Like, we would be stuck on a puzzle. We'd all start, like, graphing out the way that the puzzle looks and, like, all right, these symbols are here. How do we solve this? So we had, like, we had, like, six people just, like, with their own sheets of papers, with their own answers. None of them were right. Because I ended up, like, taking them and then going home and trying it.
Yeah.
And it was something completely different from what we were trying to solve. But that game is a lot of fun. It's really frustrating.
Yeah.
Once again, kind of like XCOM, but in a different way.
I've heard it's fun to play because you can play co-op, right?
Yeah. Well, if you just have other people in the room with you, yes.
Gotcha.
And that's how like some of my friends who are playing it, they're playing it with their wives or their girlfriends.
Yeah.
Or they had a bunch of people over, like four or five people with like a case of beer and
that's
just
so
like
funny.
Wandering around in the witness and everyone fighting over solutions.
And I've heard for certain people, you can see kind of maybe left brain, right brain, or just they have different approaches. So it does. I found that fascinating, just hearing people talk about it, that, you know, something that they couldn't solve on their own, someone else almost figured out instantly.
Yeah, there's some puzzles where I can just like get it in an instant. And then there's others that I will have to go back days later. I took a few days off this week just to kind of
let
my brain settle. Yeah. Also, I was just banging my head against XCOM all weekend.
Right,
too.
Right.
But I went back in and I'm like, all right, I now know the rules for this puzzle. Let's see what I can do. And I started just blasting through like a bunch of puzzles. Like, just let your brain rest when you play The Witness. Like, you don't have to beat it right away.
Yeah, no, it sounds like a good time. And again, that's another game that I thought the graphics and stuff were interesting. It probably would melt my my cranium there. But yeah, no, I've been like kind of the last few weeks been playing Diablo 3. It's been nice, you know, having completed Fallout 4, having some time to go back to that, play as some new characters. The Crusader's grown on me.
Okay,
like I definitely
do you have your Crusader at 70?
No, I'm at like 61.
Okay, you're getting there.
Yeah, and I think the Demon Hunter is the other one I really want to check out. I'm trying to remember. Was there another one you recommended?
Wizard.
The Wizard's the
Wizard,
first one.
Barbarian.
Yeah, the Wizard's fun.
Monk's all right. They're all good.
The Demon Hunter just looks funny because it, like, I don't know, it seems like the wackiest character you can play as in there. But yeah, no, I've enjoyed that. I've gone back to Grand Theft Auto Online. It still has some of the issues. Mm-hmm. Like, it's great once it's loaded in and the graphics are amazing and the gameplay is still fun, but it is frustrating where you'll just randomly get kicked back into Grand Theft Auto 5. And that, like, that will keep me from playing. Nick, do you play this game anymore? I know we played on 360 back in the day.
No, I'm not playing that anymore.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's unfortunate. It's weird. It has a big player base. They keep on adding stuff. And that's the one thing I like about it. It's like Diablo. They give you a lot of stuff.
It's kind of surprising how big GTA Online is.
I think it just offers a lot. Sure. Like, the racing is good enough. The shooting's good enough. And the other thing I always said is, like, I remember when Driver came out on handheld, like, I just sit around driving around, like, frustrating cops in that game. like, at one point, I was like, why do I spend so much time doing
it? It's fun.
Yeah, I mean, it is just kind of, there is kind of mindless fun with that game. But yeah, that's the frustration is, like, if you're going to invest that much time, you don't want to get booted out of the game randomly. Yeah. Perfect Dark Zero. I know you got the...
How is that? I've never played Perfect Dark Zero.
Really?
Yeah.
See, I never... I didn't... Nick,
I'm
did
kind
you...
of afraid to, because it's supposed to be real bad.
Really?
Like, real bad.
Yeah, I tried a demo, and probably like 5 minutes in, I was like, really?
Really? Yeah. I actually...
It would not age well right now.
See, I've played not through... Well, so I played through the first one.
Yep,
in the,
that's really good.
And I thought they did a good job with that. It's different. I would say...
Like compared to, you look at the lineage of Perfect Dark Zero, like what led them there was GoldenEye.
Yeah.
One of the greatest first person shooters.
Right.
Obviously doesn't really hold up well today. Perfect Dark, which is taking everything that they learned from GoldenEye and making it better. And then Perfect Dark Zero.
So what I would say is it's, I'm trying to think of like with GoldenEye. So I agree. GoldenEye's great.
Yep.
Perfect Dark, they did well. Time Splitters felt like Perfect Dark or GoldenEye a little bit.
It did. So that was actually, I think people who worked on GoldenEye split off and made Time Splitters, but Rare kept on making Perfect Dark.
Yeah. Yeah, so I could see.
I miss Time Splitters.
Yeah, Nick, did you like that one?
I absolutely did. Yeah.
Yeah, and so, and I feel like Time Splitters. It was Future Perfect was the next one.
There was Future Perfect.
Yeah, so maybe that's the best analogy. It's like they I feel like they kind of backtracked. It wasn't. Time Splitters 2 is just such a great game.
It's so good.
They did a good job with the eras, the characters, all that, and they kind of took a step back. I'd say the same thing. I don't hate it, and I kind of wonder if Perfect Dark was so good that you couldn't like live up to it without doing it really well. I found it to be all right. Some of those other... Did you get the Rare replay, Nick?
I actually didn't. That's something that, like, yeah, if I had Time to Kill, that's one of the first games I would... one of the first things I would load up.
Yeah. And there's just, like, Jet Force Gemini, I was really, like, pumped about, and that one does not convert very well. There's certain things. We had, like, this big controversy on the show probably, like, a couple of months ago where I didn't like... I don't know, Nick, if you remember Clanker's, like, I forget what it is, but the Banjo-Kazooie level with Clanker. It pisses me off now when you have good swimming mechanics, like in next-gen games.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there trying to figure out how to
Wait. Good swimming mechanics in games?
Yeah, what game has good swimming mechanics?
Anything is better than Banjo-Kazooie. No,
they're all really bad. Especially
I suppose that's very
especially
fair.
Especially N64 era.
Yeah.
Water, like, Mario 64 has terrible...
But was, like, Donkey Kong that bad? I remember was it that bad? Maybe I remember it wrong.
They refined it, I guess, because Donkey Kong came much later after after Banjo-Kazooie.
I just don't remember drowning in Donkey Kong. Like, I'm with you on Mario 64 is bad. Really bad. You guys make a good
point. Have to really relive the nightmare of Mario drowning in that game? That was scary.
It was bad.
The best part about swimming in Mario 64 was when you grabbed a Koopa shell. And then you just started, like, using that as your, like, you're basically, like,
I agree,
a submarine at that point. You're just busting through the water.
No, that's right. But, yeah, Clanker kills me, man. Yeah. Someone on Kotaku rated the Banjo-Kazooie Worlds, and it was the last one, and I agree with that kid. And so, I don't, you know, that's the only issue. Is Rare, I think, the replay offers a good value, but there is not a ton.
Amazing.
Yeah, but I feel like there's just kind of... Like what's the game that was supposed to be on GameCube that went over to
by the Ghoulies?
No, it's like Konami, I think. Not
oh,
Konami,
oh, Cameo.
Cameo.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that'd be cooler than it was. Maybe if I get into it, I'll play it more. But I was kind of like, oh, this is what it was.
Rare Replay is this. It's interesting because they have, like, a lot of their successes, but they have a lot of their failures in there, too. So you can kind of see a pretty good timeline of Rare's existence outside of the Nintendo-owned franchises.
Yeah,
I would love some Diddy Kong Racing in there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I would love, like, the Super Nintendo Donkey Kongs, but obviously that's not going to happen. But yeah, it's kind of cool to see, like, man, some of these things didn't pan out.
No,
but here it is in this collection because it's
no, they were honest with it. Yeah. They put everything out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't know. I feel like Perfect Dark Zero is playable, but again, maybe I'm just low standards or remember it wrong.
If I did play it, I haven't played it in 11 years.
It was 05.
I guess it'd be about 10 years because that came out late 2005. I almost said 2015.
But I don't know. I would definitely, especially for you, Nick, if you have spare time, it's a good pickup, Rare Replay. I don't know. There's not much else I've been playing. I'm like halfway through Tomb Raider. Sure. I think I want to finish that one up.
The newest one?
Yeah.
Is it the Tomb Raider? Okay.
Did you play that one?
Pretty good.
Or either? Did you play the first one, Nick?
No. All I've played are Guardian of Light and a little bit of Temple of Osiris. Those are
really good.
Those are fun.
They're pretty good.
I like the reboot a lot. If you liked the reboot, it improves upon the reboot. Yeah. If you didn't, I don't think you'd have any interest in
it. It's like Uncharted with better combat in my eyes.
And I like her as a character. I feel like they don't develop really anyone else around her.
Jacob, maybe. But
kind
of.
Yeah. So I was a little disappointed with that. But in general, it's a fun game.
I guess I've been playing just one other thing. I only played it for like 2 hours. But I got a code for One Piece Pirate Warriors 3.
Okay.
Which is it's a Dynasty Warriors game. But based off the anime One Piece. I had a little bit more fun with it than I've had with Dynasty Warriors. It's just kind of running around just beating up like hordes and hordes of enemies. I think I'm having fun with it because I like the characters and I'm familiar with that world and the story that they're telling.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to play through it to kind of relive the anime, like
yeah.
all 700 episodes of it. That show's been running for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah. It has like literally 700 something episodes
that's,
now.
That's absurd.
But yeah, it's a lot of fun, but it's still a Dynasty Warriors game. I don't know if I can really get behind them fully.
Okay.
It's too repetitive.
Okay.
Gotcha. Personally. So
Nick, anything else to add here?
Don't think so. Street Fighter. Let's do it.
Yes. I'm so down. I was looking for an arcade stick before I got here. So I went to Rosedale and went to the Games and Go there, and they didn't really have anything, but I saw a flyer at O'Gara's,
yeah.
They have a launch tournament next Friday, which I'm going to go.
They have that there?
Yeah.
I suppose it's right by St. Thomas. Yeah. It's a St. Thomas bar.
So yeah, I was surprised they weren't going to do it like at Games and Go.
Yeah.
Have it at O'Gara's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's on the 19th. I think it's like $5 to get in and then $5 for a tournament entry.
They have a lot of space. I'm trying to think where they would put that there. But
everywhere.
Yeah.
Just put up a bunch of TVs and
yeah, and they
play
have a
some
lot
Street
of
Fighter.
Yeah, no, that's cool. I don't know. That's exciting stuff.
You guys have like some kind of brick and mortar or like mom and pop game shop so over there.
Yeah, that the store that I went to tonight was they have a little bit of a chain around the Twin Cities.
Was this in Rosedale?
Yeah,
you said?
They have like one over in Brooklyn Park, over by near where I live.
Yeah, so I mean, Nick, any kind of like. Not pedestrian mall, but like suburban mall.
Yeah.
Pretty much has all that stuff. Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's coming around, and certainly we have a game scene here with Game Informer stuff.
I don't think we have as big of one with, at least for,
I don't think it can
for
be
fighting games, which
yeah.
I wish that we did because I would try to get out more and actually practice more.
Yeah.
But when it comes to the games in general, it's starting to grow. There's, communities like Glitch. Which is actually just right on Cedar Riverside.
Okay.
It's just a bunch of game developers that help each other out and test their
That's
games.
That's cool. You should have them on the show.
Yeah.
On the show.
Yeah, I've been in contact with a couple
of them.
Okay, gotcha.
Good.
I will try.
Well, I appreciate it, Nick. I owe you big time.
I probably
would not be... I'm serious, John. I would not be here if Nick hadn't picked me up and brought me on the paper. always encouraged me along the way. And it's exciting stuff you're doing out there. Next time I come out, I might have to check out this community. It seems like it's thriving and doing well, and really happy for you. It's a good deal.
Thanks, man. Hey, you like it enough, you can start up a chapter over there.
Yeah, we might need to do that. We have the people here.
We do have the people.
Yeah, with Procedurally Generated. Anyways, this has been Procedurally Generated. We hope you've enjoyed listening to our show. Please be sure to check us out on Audioboom and iTunes and leave us a rating or review. You can follow us on Twitter @PG_show. Thanks, and as always, game on.